right, and welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller, and with me in the studio today
is Christian Lienzberger.
Little Guru.
And not Dan Fernandez, right?
That's right, not Dan Fernandez. We'll be talking about Dan, but we've got a lot of stories lined up. We've got Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 finally available for you to download.
Then we got Team Server, Team Foundation Server, lots of stuff there.
Bunch of stuff there. We've got
PDC.
PDC, artificial intelligence, a whole month of refactoring.
And we got the vacuum cleaner.
That's right, we'll talk about that later. First, our top story. So congratulations to Dan and Angie Fernandez. They had this beautiful baby boy, Gavin Xavier Fernandez. Picture of him here, so proof that Dan is iClonable. congratulations to Dan. He'll be recovering for the month of August, and we'll see him back in September. But until then, we've got some great guests like Christian lined up to do the show. So yeah. Congratulations there.
And, congrats, Dan.
Photoshop the baby. But no, just kidding. Someone's going to. But also, in other shippable news, less noteworthy, is Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2 are finally available on MSDN and TechNet.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So we finally got the R10 builds up there.
Yep.
And they are there for download. And there's actually one thing that you could do to get the download a little bit faster.
Yeah, so this is kind of a hidden secret, but we should make people aware of it. If you actually click on the subscriber downloads and then go to top downloads, you'll actually be hitting an alternate download server that they use for the brand new downloads that come out. And at least right now, of course, if our entire viewing audience goes to it, it may change. But at least right now, top downloads is a much faster way to actually go grab the bits. So hopefully that works out for you. If lots of people find out about it, then it may not. But something to keep in mind for next time, that if you just go to the top downloads, that's kind of a faster way to get the bits.
We're all downloading right now. I'm so excited to get it finally on my PC. And I like the new Windows, right?
I love it. I've got to say, I've been running it for the last week and a half, and I'm just loving every minute of Windows 7. It makes it so much fun to work on my PC.
It's great.
Go get your bits. Also, speaking of, you may have noticed on Channel 9, we've got this new button that will take you to kind of a topic area that shows you a bunch of different videos and articles and roll-ups about Windows 7. Most of it's developer-oriented content, but some of it is also for just how do you use Windows 7, how do you do the settings and transfer wizard and things like that.
It's, as Charles said, it's time to learn new stuff, right? So it's kind of a lot, it's all about learning, and I like the experience. It looks really nice. So
that's right.
Did great stuff on this one here.
And there's another one on Edge, too.
Oh, so yeah, that's
true. For the IT professional, if you're thinking about doing deployments of Windows 7 across your enterprise and all that good stuff, here's how to ramp up on that.
And the first video is actually really nice. I had a look at it, and great job.
Which one's that?
That's the one about like
farewell to the Windows kernel dispatcher lock. That's
like really, you know, that's how I like it. I'm like the guy who likes really these videos that go into the kernel, into really Windows, where Windows is Windows or something like that. So, and that's what Charles does a lot with Windows and different other projects with his series that he had. And it's really nice, and I do like that stuff.
Cool.
So,
you guys
really
are too smart for me. That's above me. So another Windows 7 post. So we've talked about this also in the past, but Scott Hanselman kind of laid out your options for how to go about setting up Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 in kind of a physical or virtual environment. So
that's something that I'm really excited about. That's now with Windows 7 you can now boot VHDs directly without having to launch another application in Windows, but you start your boot into VHDs. And what he showed is that you could actually take the ISO image that you download from MSDN and you convert that to a VHD with a tool. And that saves you like a lot of time. You don't need to install the stuff because it's done by the tool.
Right.
And if you like, you know, if you just want to test different builds or stuff, or like, well, he tested different builds, but if you want to install it in different locations or you have like different setups that you need, and you could use the tool and then customize the VHDs later on, which is really nice.
That's right. So to boot a VHD, you don't have to set up new partitions.
No.
You can use diff drives. You can blow them away and start over from scratch.
That's so great.
It's really easy to use. And I think there's about a 3% performance overhead. So it's practically, with the exception of the hard disk, everything else is running on native hardware. The only downside of boot to VHD that I can think of, aside from the 1% to 3% performance overhead, is that they're not portable like a typical virtual environment. So I can't like pick mine up and take it to another computer like you would with a typical virtual PC, because it really is actually loading the native drivers and everything for your hardware.
You know, but then on the other side, it's better from a performance perspective, because like you get the native drivers, so you get the best right for your hardware, which is really
it's much better than virtual PC in that perspective. Another thing that I learned that I actually need to write a blog post on is virtual PC actually does not work under Windows 7. It's blocked due to compatibility reasons. But you can download what's called Windows Virtual PC. It's in release candidate now. I suspect it's going to be RTMing soon.
Well, I used that like in the beta. They had like a beta because like I participated in the beta program of Windows 7, and it's really nice because what you get there is you could set up programs to show up in your external system, like you have your virtual XP, and then you could say in the virtual PC you want like Internet Explorer or another program or Vort, whatever, to show up in the external Windows 7, like in the start menu, and if you press then the link there, it starts virtual PC, but it just shows the window of Word or the window of Internet Explorer without all the desktop around
it. Oh, I see.
Which is really nice because then you run the program still in the old environment, but you don't see the environment, you just see the program.
I see, gotcha.
So you could like drag and drop stuff around, you could like move it around the window, and still it looks as if it's a real window in Windows 7. It's still, it's Windows XP, right? So it looks like Windows XP, the window itself, but other than that, it feels really like integrated, which is really nice.
Well, the thing about it is though that they're marketing that as a feature for getting Windows XP compatible applications that aren't compatible with Windows 7 to run on your machine, which is absolutely true and that's great. But you can also use it to run your arbitrary virtual PC environments that you might have laying around.
I didn't know that.
So if you install Virtual PC 2007 on Windows 7 and try to start that up, it doesn't actually start up. It's blocked. But what you can do is you can take your virtual PC images and you can run them on Windows 7, the VHDs.
You copy them over and you run them.
The trick is that you actually, in order to run them, you have to create a new VMC file.
Okay.
It's actually a VMCX file. And to do that, you have to go to /Windows/System32, search for VPC, and you'll find all the executables in there. One of them is a VPC settings wizard. One of them is a VPC, I think it's a configuration wizard. I'll write a blog post on this, but basically that's what allows you to create your new VMCX file, and then that's also gives you native access to some of your hardware as well. So native USB devices will actually work within this. You can then boot it up, install all the Win7 specific virtual PC extensions. Runs really nice, but it's not very easy to discover. So
that's what I found was really nice with this new XP. They called it XP mode or something first. It's that you get now also the USB drives, USB stuff, right? You could connect the USB drive and stuff, which didn't work before. Right?
Didn't work. Really nice. We only supported USB mice and keyboards. So,
which is very nice now.
Yeah, like, so definitely, virtualization is the future.
Yeah, it seems like.
So another really nice thing that we've covered in the past here, but it's something to talk about now that we're on Windows 7 topic, is remote desktop and dual monitors. So remote desktop today does not support dual monitors without, you've got to do some special hoops in order to actually see both monitors.
That's actually on this blog post that we have here. There's the guy, he wrote an application that does it. Mm-hmm. But the problem there is that both monitors need to have like the same resolution. You can't have like one. Like what I do usually at home, I have like a notebook, I hook it up with my external monitor, and I use both screens, right? But the one from a notebook has like a low resolution, so I couldn't like use that, right?
Wouldn't work
because different kind of resolutions.
Yep.
And the program that this guy did only worked if you had both screens had the same resolution. And now with Windows 7, they extended the remote desktop client so that you could now actually have different kind of resolutions. Still works, right?
Yeah, that's really awesome. So that's really cool. I've got at least three monitors everywhere that I go, except with my laptop.
I never know the name of the program because I always type in MSTSC or something.
That's the difference. You're much smarter than me. So here's another post. I think we've actually talked about this in the past, but Sarah Perez wrote up a nice on-10 post on how to actually get the Bing wallpapers onto your desktop wallpaper with Windows 7. So I love Bing, but I don't usually. That's actually not my homepage, so I oftentimes miss out on having those desktop wallpapers. I just go to the little what do you call that toolbar thing in the top, and I type in my Bing
search.
Yes, exact search box. See, you're much smarter than me. but this post actually says how to hook up your Windows 7 desktop to actually pull down the Bing wallpaper, and that's because it actually comes from Long Zhen, mm-hmm. who's a friend of yours, right?
Hello. Yeah. If you're watching.
And so he actually goes through and archives all of the wallpapers.
He created an own RSS feed, mm-hmm. that, or Atom feed, I'm not sure, and he actually gets the wallpapers or the images, right?
Yep.
Puts them up and has his own feed, and he shows, or like in the post here, it's shown how actually to create a theme that's going to that feed and going to consume the pictures there and bring them to your desktop, which is really nice.
Exactly.
I'm a real fan of like changing desktop.
Yeah,
I do that. Like I have liked that really much. So
yeah, definitely.
I think it's really great.
So then, does it flip over at midnight then, or do you have to reboot?
I'm not sure.
Well, someone will have to test that. Let us know. So, PDC 2009. Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a reason to be excited. I don't think we've said, where are you working
now? No, I'm like, maybe some guys know that I used to work in a Sync framework, like mm-hmm. last year as intern. And now I'm back as PM, program manager, in the SQL Azure team. Which
awesome.
Is really nice. So.
Awesome. And so we've announced the keynotes that are happening at PDC. Mm-hmm. We've announced some of the sessions. So
yeah.
As we did with the last PDC, we'll continue to bring more and more sessions online as they get finalized.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've announced all the workshops. And so workshops are happening on day zero. So as you think about registering for PDC, you might want to also register for the workshops as well. Book your travel. Give yourself an extra day in beautiful Los Angeles, California.
I'm looking forward to Los Angeles.
Yep. Ramp up on some more technology there. Lots of Azure coming out,
yeah.
So I'm sure you guys will be
there's going to be lots of Azure, and it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, all right.
It's going to be interesting.
I won't push you for more information. I know you're not allowed to say. So what's this, Sarah?
Yeah, then next thing on our schedule or something is like the Silverlight SDK for Bing,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting. It's a bunch of DLLs that allows you to from your Silverlight applet or you could like connect to Bing and download, like do searches, get images back or get mm-hmm. like results back, which is really nice. So you could like embed Bing into your own application.
Yep. So this is an SDK that makes it easier for you to use to consume Bing within your Silverlight
yes.
application. And they also have an example application, which is pretty nice that you can run search results. You can say, I want an image search, I want a news search, whatever. You can put it in a grid. So it should give people some nice inspiration for
yeah,
how to add Bing into your own app.
Extend it for your own stuff, right?
Exactly. Yep. So customizing TFS process guidance. So
that's you now.
This is my baby here. So one of the questions that I get a lot from customers that are using TFS is how to go about customizing their process templates. So there's a bunch of articles on the web, and we ship a power tool that actually helps you customize parts of the process template. So a process template consists of both the work item types, like what does the actual form look like, what are the fields, what are the required fields, the workflow between those fields. So like I'm a tester, you're a developer, I create a bug, I send it to you. Hopefully you fix it. you resolve it, you assign it back to me, and if I test it again and it actually is working, then I assign it to close. And you can change all that stuff, but there's another part of process templates that sometimes goes overlooked, which is the actual process guidance,
okay.
Which is the documentation for the process that you're working with.
Which is like when, if a new guy comes to the team, right? He wants
exactly.
to maybe read that because he wants to know what's going on, right?
Yep, exactly. So you sit down your new person and onboard them, and so they understand how to work with the rest of the team. But almost everybody ends up making some changes to the process templates themselves, and making changes to the work items or something like that. And then your process guidance goes out of date. And so this is a really great article that Olag Seek wrote. He goes through and talks about how you actually change that process guidance. So fundamentally it's HTML, but there's actually a tool that you can use to go through and actually help you format and upload
that
data back to Team Foundation server. So I just thought it was a really nice article.
So documentation always stays synced, right? That's important.
Absolutely. That is very important. And also speaking of team system, it's kind of my week. Dan goes away, and so I fill it up. I fill up the news with team system topics. This is actually another really top requested thing that we get asked about, which is how do you use team system to conduct code reviews?
Okay.
And today you can use team system to actually do what's called a shelf set, where I take my changes and I upload them to Teen Foundation server. They're not yet committed into source control until I decide to commit them. But I might want to say, hey, Christian, can you take a look at these changes? And you can do that, and we can go back and forth over email. But there's not really a great workflow within Teen Foundation server for saying...
allows you to keep track of that, right? I
mean, yeah, that's what team review does. And so thanks to Mickey Gousset, one of our MVPs, who actually pointed me at this. JB Brown is actually another one of our MVPs who's behind this. So great job, guys. And there's a video you can watch where I can say, I'm going to request a code review. Okay. That actually gets uploaded, and a work item is created for you mm-hmm. to go in and do that code review.
Okay.
Then as you're going through and you say, hey, this line should actually be, you know, I think you should be using this API instead of this API, you can highlight the line.
Comments and stuff? Or?
Yeah, what you do is you highlight the line or the multiple lines, you make your comments, and then when I'm looking at them, I have a task list saying, okay, here's the different things that Christian thinks that I should change. I click on that, it takes me right to the line of code, so really powerful stuff.
That's very nice. It's nice integration, right?
Yeah, integration. It's a free download. It works on TFS 2005, TFS 2008, and they said that they will make it work with TFS 2010.
Cool.
So yeah, very cool. And one more, VSTS 2010. Sorry, lots of them here.
but this one is really, I mean, it's a really nice one too, right? I mean, all the other tools are really nice too, but this one is also really interesting.
Yeah, so you want to talk about this one?
So this one is, it allows you to specify, to catch strings, like misformatting in strings or something. Like you have a string format. And if you like, you know, you add parameters that you in the end fill in with some kind of text or some kind of numbers or something. And if you miss one of these, which is a common thing, right?
Mm-hmm,
you
sure.
might like create a string, put it into resources somewhere, then it has like three parameters in there, and you forget that there are three in there, and you only add two or stuff like that, right? So this extension...
Well, it's a static analysis rule.
It's a rule which will allow you then to like find these kind of problems, right, and alert you, and you're then able to... Well, you get feedback, right? That's important, and you could then change them in the end, right? You could
sure.
fix the problem there.
Right, yeah, so, the compiler won't actually pick up this error. It doesn't actually evaluate what's in those strings, but the static analysis rules
will
can.
Will do, right?
Yeah, and so this is just one example. There's some other static analysis rules, as I'm thinking through this, that do ship in 2010. Maybe we can show some examples later that do examine what's within those strings. But by default, the compiler doesn't really know what's in those strings, and so it won't
touch them. But that's why the tools are there, right?
That's why the static analysis tools are there, so that's just another way that can save you. So, 31 days of refactoring.
Yeah, it's a really nice one. So this guy actually,
Sean
Chambers. He's going through 31 days, and each day he's going to show how different kind of or type of refactoring, right? Mm-hmm. And he's putting them day by day on this website, so that people could actually go there each day and have a new type there, a new refactoring type there, and could like look at the tutorial. Like it's a simple sample that shows you simply how to do that kind of refactoring, and gives you insights into that, right? So that's kind of
right.
And you could use then in your own projects. Like you learn there, and you apply it then in your own projects, and you learn something new, which is really interesting.
Exactly. So we're all familiar with the basics: extract method, rename parameter.
That came with Visual Studio, right?
Yeah, those come with Visual Studio. You can go get ReSharper, and that has lots more. But I think just even looking at these posts, I really appreciate the simplicity that Sean has put into these. It's a good way to think about how you structure your code. So regardless of the tool support, it's, where do I want that method, or how do I want to structure that code so that's most maintainable longer term? So really cool post series. So
Drunk
our friend,
Tender.
Drunk Tender. So this is Clint Ruckus. We've talked about this in the past. So Clint has been working on this for about a year, I think. It's a Drunk Tender application. The idea is that you've got multiple liquids that you can hook up to this machine. So
which you've seen here, right?
Yep, exactly. So down below this series of tubes is a...
Yes, exactly.
It's powered by the internet. It's connected to some bottles of liquid. And so that might be Diet Coke, and you say you've got, you know, Pepsi, and you've got, help me out, rum, and you've got
vodka,
you know, vodka,
tequila.
Exactly. And then he's got a WPF application he's written here. that you feed it what you have in the system, and then from there it comes up with a matrix of all the different drinks that it knows how to make.
It's going to mix them right for you.
Exactly. Really, so you say, I want a rum and Coke, and so it takes, you know, two parts Diet Coke and one part rum, and it pours them together, and boom, you've got a rum and Coke. And so this is just a nice little demo of Clint showing the system in action. He tells me he's going to be working on a Coding for Fun article series. So if you wanted to build your own drunk tender and you're above the legal age in your country of residence, then you could do that. So,
but you could also mix something else, right?
It doesn't need to have alcohol in there, right? You could make, you know,
there are lots of drinks that don't have alcohol in there and still are really good.
There are, but what's the point of having a drunk tender if you can't?
Well, then it's a drink tender.
A drink tender? Yeah.
Well, drunk, yeah.
So anyway, we wish Clint luck in his testing. It's funny, he tweeted this last week that his application for building for learning WPF was drunk tender, whereas Scott Hanselman used Baby Smash. So you guys are having way too much fun learning WPF out there.
So this one is a short series about how to build artificial intelligence in C# and Link. Mm-hmm. So what they do is like, it's from Miguel de Icaza.
He actually pointed to that, right?
So that's
Christopher Park that wrote the series.
And actually, it's still in the beginning, right? So these are the first four articles or lessons that have been published on this. And they're going to show how to use Link and C# to create some kind of artificial intelligence. And they start from the basics, which means they really start, what's artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. They give you an overview about the history, how it became what it is now, right now.
Yep.
So, and they're starting to use Link to data mine and to give data and to return data and to aggregate the data in some certain ways to build some kind of rules and stuff that are then used to build some kind of artificial intelligence, which is really a nice thing, right?
Exactly. And I think it's really neat to think about using Link for this, because you have to imagine, like, yeah, like, do you remember Dr. Spatzo back in the day, the early, but back in the early days when you had, you know, early artificial intelligence, it was probably just a bunch of, you know, case statements. Like, if the user says this, then do that, then, and so on and so forth.
That's really intelligent, right?
Yeah, well, it's artificial, right? But now you can actually hook up to these massive databases and be data-driven, but in order to do so, you also have to have a good way to query that database and get the information back out. So
do some logic on them, right?
Yep.
So it's cool to see
Link being used for that.
Yes.
So time for picks of the week.
So my pick of the week is Roomba and the SDK for the Roomba.
Mm-hmm.
So Roomba, I'm not sure if you guys know, it's the thing that's up here. So it's a robot which does vacuum cleaning, right? So it's kind of a mixture.
So it like learns your house and it goes around.
Yeah, it goes
and,
around
like,
your house, like,
and,
yeah, yep. Well, trash.
Well, I mean, dirt.
Like dirt, right?
Yeah.
So it has even a dirt detector.
Wow.
It's really interesting. Like, if it finds some dirt, it will circulate around the dirt.
Nice.
Until the dirt is gone.
What if you put it outside? Does it just build, like, dig a hole through the earth?
Nice.
Yep.
And the other thing is that this guy actually moves around the house. Like, you start it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it moves around. And you could put some invisible barriers, which is, like, little plastic tubes or something, where it doesn't cross, right? It sends some signal, so it knows, oh, there's an ant. I don't, like, this is a room, here the room ends, right?
Yeah.
So I don't go outside.
Don't fall off the stairs. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't fall off the stair because it has a detector, so if it goes over an edge, it will just stop.
Okay.
So just if you said, okay, this time, today, you're going to clean the living room, you put the things on, and it will just stay in the room.
Okay.
Without closing doors, which is really nice, right?
So that's what you get out of the box.
Yeah. And then there's the SDK, right?
Right.
So developers could get there and use the sensors and the motion features of the Roomba and program the room on their own. So that it moves around, that it detects stuff and whatever you want, right? And what's interesting, you could also make the Roomba sing.
No way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's really awesome. So it could move around in the house and sing you a song while it's cleaning.
That's hilarious.
That's really.
Now here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Can you hook up the Roomba and the drunk tender together?
Of course.
So that it cleans your house, it brings you a drink.
I'm sure you could put on a suit that looks like a bar.
Like a waiter or something? Nice.
Yeah.
And then
you put the stuff on it, it moves around and sings some songs. You know, you can imagine what kind of songs going on.
Okay, so the story here is you're going to buy a Roomba, right? And you want to program it, and you were looking for an SDK, and this is the one you found.
Yeah, that's the one that it's on SourceForge.
Yep.
It's free. And that's the one that I found. And it seems to me that's the one to go. That's the guy who I can't recall the name. He actually, he built that, and he used some interfaces that these robots have, so that you could like interact with the robot, which is in nice.
Okay, we are excited to see what you build.
I'm going to build something.
Awesome. And my pick of the week is actually to talk about my good buddy Russ Festino. He's a developer evangelist for Microsoft down in Tampa, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I've been at Microsoft for a little over 7 years now. And when I first started, I went down and I watched one of Russ's presentations. And this guy is the most passionate, just really full of energy guys that I've ever seen. He gets up with a hard hat and suspenders and tool belt, and he talks about Visual Studio in just the most exciting way that I've ever seen. And so what he's done is he's taken the presentations that he's been giving and he's made them available on Channel 9.
Nice.
So this is a new show on Channel 9 within the last month. It's called Toolshed. The episode 4 that I've linked to here is he shows Expression Encoder. He shows a bunch of new features here. Mm-hmm. Expression Blend, Windows Mobile Marketplace. One of the really cool things that I think that Russ does is that he also includes lots of people from the community as well, so MVPs, other people that you know are just really good speakers. So I think it's just a fun, exciting way to learn about new technology, it's another show that I can recommend on Channel 9, so check that out.
Nice.
So that's it for this week. Christian, thanks for being on the show. We'll let you get
me,
back
Red.
To SQL Azure,
yeah.
And we'll see you at PDC.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.